as well. And that's where I think the real danger in that is. And there's also another point that I wanted to bring up about the station and about the network in general is that, you know, you may have heard that Mary Frances Berry during some of the protests in Berkeley last year was talking about how these are a bunch of white males with gray ponytails that are out there protesting, and what we really want to bring to the station is more diversity. And what we see at KPFK, I think, from that, earlier than that and since then, is an incredible whitening of the station, an incredible narrowing of the diversity of views. And I say whitening of the station when you look at who's on the air, you know, during prime time. And so, I mean, it's another instance of, you know, where you're really not getting what you should be getting, and also of the tremendous hypocrisy that exists. So that's very brief, but I think those are all reasons why we really need to fight to take back the station, to take back the resource that we have here in Los Angeles and the network as well. And besides that, I want to make a quick pitch for you guys to support Free Speech Radio News. It's not heard in Los Angeles, but you can hear it at www.savepacifica.net/strike. And also on that website are the list of stations that are carrying it. But we want you to help us produce it, because it is expensive. Since the beginning of the strike, we've raised $13,000, and we've used that money to pay reporters. We pay $150 per story, which is a little bit less than what Pacifica pays. But we've been able to do that, and we're proud that we've been able to do it, and it's caused a lot of people to be, you know, more motivated about sending us their work. So we really need you to help out and donate. Give as much as you can to help us continue to produce, because after Washington, we're pretty much down to nothing, and we have to build up again from zero. And John Jackson there has some leaflets, and they have a little tear-off sheet where you can fill it out and say how much money you're giving, or you can just write out a check and I'll take it. You can write it out to Friends of Free Speech Radio. So I hope you will, and I hope you'll ask any questions that you have later. Farewell.
Very good. Thank you, Robin. It was a pleasure to demonstrate with you in front of KPFK. Okay, a couple of announcements. We're going to have questions and answers in a moment, and if we don't have all the cards, so if you fill out this card and pass it over to the folks who will be coming by, we're going to try to put the questions into categories and try to cover everyone's concern. That's one thing. Also, people are asking, well, should I pledge to KPFK? Should I pledge to the Pacifica work? Yes, but there is such a thing as a pledge on hold. They're in the lobby. This actually tells them that you're pledging a certain amount of money, but that you're putting it kind of in escrow until certain demands are made. So the pledge on hold is not to deny money, but merely to hold the money until there is a station programming that truly reflects the progressive community. If you're interested in pledge on hold, they're in the lobby, and please ask people there about how, you know, to fill out. And you can put your own reason why your money is temporarily being held, the demand that you would make before the money is released to the station. Another point I want to make here is, you know, this struggle, I said I was in front of KPFK. There were kids there from middle school and high schools who are listening. One of the reasons this is so important is the political development of some of these kids is occurring when they happen to hit KPFK, you know, in years gone by. And so it's very, very true that this is a struggle that's very transgenerational. I was demonstrating with high school kids, and I see in the front row the distinguished Frank Wilkinson. So you can see this struggle goes across many generations. Good to see you. The young people are getting activated, Frank. So we don't have to worry. They're there, coming along. Okay, I'm going to introduce now a hero of mine. I say he's a hero of mine because I've seen him work tirelessly. A native of Los Angeles, John Martinez learned radio production in 1992 in what is now a non-existent KPFK apprenticeship program. Since 1995, John produced and hosted Radio Chicano, that aired Sundays, Saturdays rather, at 5 on KPFK. I have a lot of material here that I could use. He also brought to us the voices from Chiapas. He brought the voices of the Zapatista Revolution. He documented portions of the fifth anniversary of the EZLN's uprising from Chiapas in 1999 and immediately brought it to the airwaves January of that year. As well as the consulta that the Zapatista called for, he covered that, going to Tijuana and covering the voting in the consulta in Tijuana. There's many, many documentaries. John Martinez has been a strong voice at KPFK. However, he is also now a former programmer at KPFK. It covered Chicano, Chicana, Mexicano politics, culture, and resistance, Prop 187, Prop 209. He covered the struggle for housing by La Unión de Vecinos in the Alicia Village housing projects. He's also the music and culture of Aztlan Underground and so on. I mean, this is a man who played a key role, now a former programmer. Welcome, John Martinez.
All right. Thank you, people. No surprise, we're running late, so I'll be as direct to the point as possible. I'll cover a little bit about KPFK, being an insider there from 92. Also, a little bit about the politics and culture of Chicano radio. Also, my experience since September in terms of being involved with the organizing in terms of the resistance of Pacifica in Southern California since September, actually October, when I broke the gag rule, and what's going on today. KPFK and the crisis that Pacifica is in the context of, say, from the 1996 Telecommunications Act, where the media and the corporations have come in and the mergers and what's gone on with the dominance of that, to where money talks more than ever, to actually what's gone on with Pacifica, their response in this context in about 5 years ago now, the five-year strategic plan with KPFK and Pacifica. The strategic plan within Pacifica is the three essential elements of the strategic plan is to raise money, also to build audience, and to have a smoother sound. None of these really have to do any directly relationship with the Pacifica mission, the article of incorporation, the principles of Pacifica. It has nothing to do with that. But the effects of that you can see clearly. There's a KPFA folio out in the lobby there. You can pick it up. What it is with the KPFA folio, I give you part one of my insider perspective of what's gone on at KPFK since 92. Please pick that up. With the time limitation we got today, I can only give you a little bit of the highlights or lowlights of KPFK. Since Mark Shub came in about 1996, what's happened with KPFK is that you've had, with his own admission, back in the 1999, October 99, Pacifica National Board meeting in Houston, said over 150 volunteer programmers off the air from different radio collectives, gone from the air, are indigenous issues, specifically from American Indian Airwaves, gone and not replaced with anything that can take the place of that to give any kind of detailed, specific look at the original peoples of this hemisphere. Also gone, East Wind, Mia Iwataki, Asian Pacific Islander culture, Korean, Japanese, what's gone on with Chinese American culture here in Southern California, it's gone and nothing's replaced it. What's gone on with radical African programming since 94 on, with the purges that happened, with the linguistics that was used on the air, what's called anti-Semitic uses of the tensions between blacks and Jews. You can see the tensions still today. Those, when we talk about the Pacifica mission and what goes on, we give lip service to it. When it erupts inside of KPFK or Pacifica, what we do is sweep it under the rug and we purge. We don't deal with the tensions. We don't deal with the causes of the tensions. We just get rid of the people. What's going on today, the Mexica movement is here today with the black Jewish tensions that have gone on, the black Korean tensions that were played up during the, and today is the 8th anniversary or the commemoration of what happened when L.A. started burning, what have we learned from it? Practically nothing. What have we done about it? Practically nothing. It can burn again very easily. August 29th, 1970, Chicanos, when they were driven from the park with the anti-Vietnam War moratorium, they went to where? Whittier Boulevard in East L.A. looking for Jewish American and white American store owners that treated them racially shitty. These things keep going. East L.A. burned in August 1970. L.A. burned 8 years ago. And what have we done about it? I'm not saying that KPFK and Pacifica can solve humanity's problems. But we do have a mission statement, and we're supposed to be dealing with these issues. We're not. We're supposed to be out of here at 5 o'clock, and we're supposed to have about an hour of Q&A. So let me rush through this quickly. Chicano Radio broke the gag rule October 1999 last year, and I took heat prior to doing it, not doing it prior to that, because I didn't see any hope in terms of organizing in Southern California. What gave me hope was what happened last year, summer 99, in Berkeley. It's not a perfect campaign that's happened up there. I'm going to be going up there tomorrow and checking out what's going on there. But it did give me hope that we can do it here. Since September, when we had brothers and sisters from the Bay Area down here to check out what's going on, we attempted, and it was the first attempt, at a LA Coalition for Free Speech radio. There's a lot in terms of just the whole dynamic and the whole demographics, the spread out nature of Southern California. Just with all of that, we're very spread out. We have no centers really, and we are very divided, atomized, and we're very isolated from each other, and we don't know each other very well. The first attempt at the LA Coalition for Free Speech Radio has failed in terms of us coming together, seizing the moment after Robin and Ruben were temporarily purged from the station. We got them back in, and Robin then took another stand and came out with the Pacifica Stringer Strike, which I'm a part of also. But with Ruben, he's back on the air. But we have to deal with the fact that a lot of programmers are very territorial and not in it for the community when it comes to interests. We have... We have our own problems within the community that are Pacifica dissidents here in Southern California in terms of our lack of a political maturity, in terms of working out our differences. So mainly, we are our own worst enemy, but we do have other problems within it. I take responsibility for the failure, not single-handedly, but the failure in terms of what we attempted to do with the coalition. We are going to, in about a month or so, have a final forum in terms of just dealing with burying the political baggage of that coalition and then moving on with the same name of LA Coalition for Free Speech Radio and going on with it. So I'm not done with this, and we're going to continue doing it. I didn't break the gag rule as a kamikaze act. I didn't do it as media suicide. I saw hope with what happened in Berkeley, and I have a lot more hope working with Micro Radio in East L.A. and seeing the creativity that's on the streets here. Laura was talking about the IMC. The IMC is something Pacifica needs to tap into, or the IMC or the Micro Radio movement needs to kick Pacifica in the ass to wake up, because we need that. We have 112,000 watts here in Southern California. We need to tap into the 20-something videographers that aren't afraid to take on the system. Pacifica is much too mainstream. And the people that are supporting Pacifica now, I work at the Peace Center, and for me, a native of L.A., the Peace Center, for people that know it, at Fairfax and 3rd, still for me was culture shock going in there. You know, we have a lot to, what do you want to say? We've got a lot to learn still from each other. Native of L.A. and still walking in, you know, we have negative stereotypes of white liberals, and there's just a lot of this... glossing over and giving lip service to cultural diversity, just calling people, you guys are that people of color, you're that Hispanic, Latino, or yeah, you call yourself Chicano, whatever. We have to really be able to go beyond the lip service when we talk about cultural diversity, ethnic diversity, and what's going on. I was talking a little earlier about the Mexica movement that's here. They're here, and they have a current campaign regarding what's going on with the Spielberg film and what's going on against it to boycott The Road to El Dorado. The thing is, if anybody has seen it or has not seen it, it's stereotypical. I threw my TV away a couple years ago, and Hollywood is not on the map anymore, but unfortunately it's all around us. You've got indigenous people that are seen as either whores, thieves, or ignorant. And it's something that goes to the heart of what's gone on here on this continent since the Europeans invaded. So you go back 500 plus years and we're still struggling with it today. The thing is with all this, when we talk about the differences, the different subtle nuances between what perhaps a Latino or a Hispanic may be and a Chicano, you have Chicano radio that deals with the Zapatista Revolution and is very critical of, say, the Secretary Luis Caldera of the Army about what he's doing in terms of recruiting young people, in terms of being described as a coyote for coming in and trying to persuade young youth rather than finishing their education, an education that is inferior here in LA Unified School District. You have the Secretary of the Army, Mexican-American Luis Caldera, coming in and telling them to join the military, join the Marines, the Navy, and everything else, when the education, again, is inferior. And we have the criminalization of youth for Prop 21. You have East LA youth walking out in droves, and you hear minimal, if any, coverage on Pacifica here in LA. Micro radio in East LA, we were there for them, and we will continue to be there for them. That's one thing that I'm very proud to be part of. We have the support from the community. We had a recent fundraiser for that. We'll be going from 20 watts to 75 watts in East LA. We're on every Friday, Saturday, Sunday night. Radio Clandestina, I have info packs if people want to pick that up. The IMC is something also we need to tap into in terms of all this. But the final thing I wanted to say in terms of the nuances of the culture, you have, say, someone who identifies perhaps as a Hispanic or Latino, David Acosta, who's going to take over for Mary Frances Berry, who's a CPA. So someone who's pro-capitalism, who's willing to, and we've seen from the board, willing to consider seriously selling the stations. We have to look at this and not just have blanket terms that are sloppy in terms of the different nuances between the communities. We can't just hire people because of their skin color within Pacifica and think that everything's going to be all right. Verna, to me, was an excellent exception to the rule of what has gone on with Pat Scott, Mary Frances Berry, and others that have their own political and economic interests. So Verna is an excellent, again, example in terms of that exception. So with, again, and I'm trying to finish it with the Mexica movement, and then I'll end. And that is, again, with the film that's come out regarding Road to El Dorado. Not through them. If you look at their material, you see it's very fair in terms of comparing what happened with the genocide of the Jewish people and what has happened with the super genocide of indigenous people here on this continent. But there are people in the Chicano-Mexicano community that take that, look at Spielberg, and make anti-Semitic generalizations about all Jews. Where is that dialogue going to happen if it doesn't happen with 112,000 watts in Southern California? Again, East LA can burn again, like what happened with the Chicano moratorium. L.A. today, again, 8 years later, can burn again because we're not dealing with these issues. And we can't just kick the people off the air and then sweep it under the rug and hope that CPB will keep funding us and everything will get better. It won't get better. It'll only get better with us in terms of working together. In terms of the last thing I want to say with organizing here in L.A., we have a lot to learn in terms of political maturity, a lot to learn in terms of what actually it means to have dialogue and not to shout at each other and to be individualistic and to have ego and to have personality. Also a problem in terms of what I was talking about with the Peace Center. You have, again, unfortunately, the stereotype sometimes comes through with the white liberal in the sense of you have ADA, Americans for Democratic Action, who will recruit openly Kathy Lowe and other people from KPFK management to be on their board. A woman, a Chinese American, it looks good. She has practically no politics, but that's okay. It looks good on the surface. And also you get programming access if you're all in bed together. You also had the unfortunate incident with us as we demonstrated against Mark Cooper's hit piece against Mumia Abu-Jamal. And what we get is the LA head of the Mumia Coalition sitting on the communication network of that, Jim Lafferty of the National Lawyers Guild. I bring up Jim Clark with the ADA again. He signs on to the Saul Landau so-called Stop Pacifica Bashing letter that went around the country. And people have been dropping off of, Mike Davis and others, when they actually get the information. I'm bringing this up, whether it be Jim Clark, Jim Lafferty, or anybody else, not to demonize them, not to put them in another camp, but that they have to wake up to see what's going on with this. Pacifica could easily be self-destroyed. Pacifica can easily self-destruct. 112,000 watts is what we have in LA here to actually address the human problems that we have here. Now, are we going to do it or not? I'll leave it here. One of the things I want to say, too, in terms of our dysfunction as activists, is that we have to pass out 3x5 cards because people are not disciplined enough in terms of being able to write down simple questions and want to go on with a monologue and also want to get into confrontation about it. So because things are so polarized and hyper-politicized in L.A., we have to have 3x5 cards today. We've got about 30 minutes to answer the questions. We'll deal with it now. I guess, Don, you want to come up? Thank you.
Yeah. We beg your indulgence here. Robin Yurevich, remember, was talking about support for the Stringer strike. And, good. She's making a... No, you're using someone else's money for that. Okay. So we're going to pass this around. Robin, can you come up and just... we're actually going to indulge you. We're going to have two surprise quick speakers that are going to speak for about 3 minutes to 4 minutes. But I think you'll approve of this. Yesterday was the last day on the air for KPFK newsman Frank Stoltz. And Frank, why don't you come up here? We're going to have Frank Stoltz share his experience. Frank Stoltz.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. John, I'm working on my self-discipline, and next time I'll make sure to answer my invitation to speak here, which I was tardy in responding to. But I did feel like it's important to express how I feel leaving the station, and certainly in the context of all of our interests in improving KPFK and improving Pacifica. There is a problem at KPFK. I've been there 7 years, and in the time I've been there, I've seen the pendulum swing. When I got there, we would have meetings. A lot of times, nothing would happen. There was a lot of spirit of collective decision-making, of trying to come to consensus on programming issues, facilities issues, and there was a problem. Many times, things would not get done. The pendulum has swung, and we have adopted more or less the corporate model of decision making. And yes, indeed, the subscriptions department is more efficient. The facility looks great. Some of the programming decisions and some of the new things that we've been putting on, hi Dan, and Verna, Laura, I think have been positive. But we have lost the spirit of collective decision-making. We have lost the idea that we are going to be a different kind of organization internally. At one point, I heard management say, we're going to preach democratic principles, but we don't necessarily have to practice them. And I think that that's a problem. We have got to, and let me give you some specific examples of issues that I'm particularly concerned about and of where I think we've disconnected. We don't really have a recruitment and training program. When I got there, we had a very good recruitment and training program. John Martinez, Kathy Still, Robin, Donnie Daly, all of these people percolating up through communities, reporting on their own communities, more of an organic sense of what's happening in KPFK as opposed to just talking to analysts. That's got to be part of the agenda of improving KPFK. Budget, staff position, commitment to recruitment and training. There's got to be a program council. There's got to be hiring committees. There have to be structures, non-negotiable structures for input, for, again, some sense of collective decision-making. If the buck's going to stop with the program director and the general manager, that's fine. But they've got to be accountable to a larger group that they cannot abolish as they have. And the effort to get rid of the local advisory board is obviously an anti-democratic effort. I've got my own issues with the local advisory board and who's ought to be on there and some of the actions of some of the members. But to lop off one of the an arm of the organization because you don't like what it's doing is obviously anti-democratic. in terms of some of the programming issues, we're not having these debates about whether there should be ethnocentric programming or the value of block programming or whether or not you should be doing block programming and then next to it more radical programming or something that is gay and lesbian oriented. We have just ended, at least in terms of the broader KPFK community within the station, these kinds of discussions. They're being held in corner offices by relatively few people. For instance, there's nothing wrong with having Robert McNamara on, but how you're going to put that, what kind of context, what kind of questions, and then what's going to come after McNamara. You know, I don't necessarily agree with the idea that, you know, we should close those doors. One of the key issues I have to mention before I step down is news coverage, because I was the news director. If I have one regret, it wasn't to immediately resign when I was prohibited from making news decisions about coverage of the Pacifica crisis. I regret that. News directors have to be free to make those decisions. What happened to KPFK? What happened to KPFK was, I said, okay, you're arguing that I'm an employee, I'm a member of the union, I know some of the people involved. Fine, let's bring in an outside journalist and have them cover this issue. I struck that agreement with the program director. Never followed through on it. We had an independent journalist come in one day, produced a story. We were going to edit it, examine it, some level of a collective effort. She was nowhere to be found. Nothing ever happened. The one or two stories that were done by a journalist who's a consultant at the station who I think management was confident would give favorable coverage. This is a huge problem at Pacifica. I reject the idea that you know, I couldn't cover almost any issue I wanted to in any manner I wanted to. I agree with the idea that we're subject to the political atmosphere, and I think there are political shifts going on in terms of how we're covering things. But I was never told I couldn't cover one thing or another, except the Pacifica issue. And obviously, whenever there's a conflict of interest between news people and management, it always has to do with either coverage of the organization or advertisers, since we don't have advertisers. So when it came down to the rubber hitting the road on that key issue, the last thing I want to say is we do have to avoid the kind of personal attacks that often have characterized this debate. We share many of the values of the people at the station. My suggestion would be to populate the station, volunteer at the station, be there, because that is how I think part of the equation for changing KPFK, for reinstating the values, and to bring this pendulum back, not to the old days, you know, the glorious old days are never all that glorious, but to set up structures where it is once again a community radio station.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much, Frank. We deeply appreciate it. And you are right. We wanted you here, and unfortunate that you had so little time, but that adds another dimension of understanding. Thank you very much. You know, one thing is, Laura has this book out there, and she's willing to sign it, and she wants to really get it into the hands of readers. She does not want to carry them back to the East Coast. So, after this... the Stringers, that's right. And that was the other thing. Run out and get one. Don't run out too quickly, because this next speaker is important too. But go out there immediately and get one of these books. It benefits the Stringer strike. We're going to have now. This we are going to hold to only 3 minutes. The chair of the actually, the local advisory board for KPFK is with us. There was a very positive court ruling that just occurred around the suit. This is a three-minute deal, David. I'm sorry to hold you to that. David Adelson of the the local advisory board is going to come up and give us an update on the suit.
Welcome, welcome. Hi, everybody. I'm going to talk quickly. As far as I'm concerned, a lot of what this entire struggle has been about is who gets to have a role in deciding what happens at the only listener-supported station in the major listener-supported broadcast network in the country. And I think the answer over the last several years has been that if you're not willing to support the station on the terms of management, you're not welcome to participate. And I've had a real problem with that personally, as I think a number of people have. Sorry about that. Legally speaking, the Pacifica Foundation is a corporation. And one of the things that has happened in recent years is that the corporation's board of directors has tried on at least two occasions to get control of its own membership. Despite claims by certain management and national board members that local advisory boards have no role in the governance of the institution, or that they should not, the advisory boards, which were once called station boards, according to the bylaws, had voting rights for members of the board of directors. Local advisory boards elected a majority of that board. The governing board voted to make itself self-selecting in February of 1999. I could go through all that, but it would take me an hour. The point is that local advisory boards brought suit against the governing board for three causes of action: illegally changing their bylaws without the consent of those people whose votes were being removed, unfair business practices relating primarily to the use of funds for things contrary to the Articles of Incorporation. And the specific point here is the part of the Articles of Incorporation that say that Pacifica will report on all matters vitally affecting the community. The matter vitally affecting the community, which Pacifica funds were used to prevent a reporting of, was what was going on internally at Pacifica. And 15,000 people in the streets in Berkeley were a demonstration of that fact, that it did matter to the community. The other matter is a sort of a technical matter relating to the fact that the governing board has not followed its own bylaws in the way its executive committee was chosen. In any case, we brought suit, and as part of that suit, we actually did something that I found quite extraordinary. I wasn't actually sure whether or not it was going to prevail, but we have pierced the corporate veil, meaning that we have held individual directors personally liable for the wastage of hundreds of thousands of dollars of foundation money. The judge in... The claims we are making are a bunch of ridiculous contentions was demonstrated to be false by the fact that we recently won our hearing on demurrer. The judge in the case, Judge Richmond of Alameda County, ruled that every single point that we were alleging may continue. In other words, we are able to bring suit on all these points. That if we demonstrate what we are alleging, that individual directors are indeed liable for wastage of the foundation funding, that we do have voting rights as to directors, and as part of this process, we will have access and discovery to the books of Pacifica, which have been closed since 1995. We will have access to essentially all records dealing with what has been done and what I call the CPB boondoggle, which is a whole story in itself. The bottom line of this is we are going to be seeking injunctions within the next 4 weeks to prevent the governing board from continuing to do things that are damaging to the institution. And we may be able to have an influence over the board composition in the very near term. That means that in the very, very near term, we may see the possibility of this situation opening up so that people who have previously been excluded from participating in the conversation get to participate, with the ultimate goal of a revision of structure that allows those people who have to be able to defend this institution, including all the people who have supported it, from having some sort of standing so that this can never happen again. My time is up.
Very good. Okay, we're just about ready now to move to the questions. I do want to say that there are a lot of tables out front. I was asked to announce eyewitness from Iraq, an editor of the new book, Iraq Under Siege, will be at Akron. That on the table out there, you can get the pledge on hold, and there'll be someone there to announce it. And I do want to mention, in the back there's Sally's holding up a poster. They were brought down, Sally, I believe, from Berkeley. These posters are $15 or $25, and they support the struggle around the issue of Pacifica, KPFA, KPFK. And Sally and Peter are standing there. Be sure to take time on the way out to get one of these bargain posters, $15 or $25. And now we're going to go to questions, because this panel has been among the most patient panel I've ever seen. We have 2 minutes for questions. All right. You each get 10 seconds. No, I'm sorry. I'm going to ask the panel this first question, and any one of you can respond, but please, you're going to have to make the answers relatively short. We have seen what happened to Pacifica Radio in Texas, the outlet in Texas. Is the situation in Texas, what we see there, is that what we can expect further in Pacifica outlets if something doesn't dramatically change? Does anyone have a comment on that? When you wake up, you'll be relaxed and you'll remember everything. No.
KPFT in Houston used to have, I believe, as high as 9, almost 12 different languages on the air, different public affairs there at KPFT. In the recent years, it's now gone to 90%+ music. And Garland Ganter, I believe his name is, who is now the Pacifica National Program Director in the Pacifica National Board meeting in Houston in 99, said that we're still doing everything the same. We just sound better. And again, it goes back to the five-year strategic plan where, again, more money, more audience, and a smoother sound. So that's what's going on there. At KPFK, we've lost a lot of public affairs programming. We've lost a lot of cultural and ethnic diversity with those public affairs programs, and we now have CDs courtesy of the Global Village, and we have more programming like that in terms of that. I hear recently with KPCC Pasadena Radio, they went to the talk format with Minnesota Public Radio buying them, that there's rumors that Sancho, who used to do Tex-Mex and oldies, may be coming to KPFK. They get rid of the Zapatista Revolution with Chicano Radio, and they replace it perhaps with Tex-Mex and oldies. I believe that blues and also rhythm and blues may be coming our way via the creativity of independent producers from KPCC. So I would say, generally speaking, when you have a management that lacks political radio vision, then yes, you're going to get more filler, and that's music.
Have any of you read the lengthy article in the current issue of The Nation? And what is your reaction to what this article is reporting? Pardon me? Well, first of all, I think I misread the question. What are you saying? Okay, there was the current issue of Nation magazine. Oh, the article here. Okay. Let's be more specific. The feature story, What's Going On at Pacifica, a special report by John Dinges. And this is the article. Now, many of us have not read the article, but I'm just wondering, many of us will read the article. Is anyone on the panel like to give a brief analysis?
Yeah, in fact, what I said in my talk was particularly related to what Dinges' article is about, because he presents the struggle in Pacifica between those who want to improve the quality of the programming and those who do not. And what you've heard today is not that is the debate that's going on in Pacifica. I think, from my experience in Pacifica, I've been there for 3 years in the National Programming Unit, but I think the debate is over two things. One is whether or not you stay community-based, or you run the network from the top down. Top down versus bottom up. That's number one. And the second issue is whether Pacifica is going to stay true to its mission of where it's to mission-driven programming. So those are the two issues. Dingus presents doesn't present that as the debate that's happening in Pacifica today, and that's my main criticism of the article, besides the fact that it's inaccurate, it's filled with inaccuracies because the reporter did not fully report out the story, did not talk to a lot of people, and so there's a lot of factual errors. But the main error is that it frames the debate incorrectly, in my opinion.
I'll add something to that. Is this working? I would just add something to that, drawing a little bit on what John said, is I think that an interest... What we're dealing with at Pacifica is a publicly held valuable resource. Now, that is going to be a problematic thing, and it's an experiment to figure out how do you publicly hold and operate a valuable resource. And Dingus presents a story, as Dan said, of kind of this side that had these answers versus that side that was just wanting to do it the old way. And, I mean, I wasn't interviewed for the story. I don't believe Verna was. Amy wasn't called. It was kind of extraordinary quality of reporting going on. But more than that, what a missed opportunity, as John mentioned, to discuss the real issues here. There's a debate about this question of block programming. There's a debate about the question of national and local programming and what should be the balance. All these things, I think, are fascinating. We're not against having these things discussed. We're not against getting more listeners, although we're kind of presented as if we are. What we're losing and what the nation failed to provide us was any place to have a really interesting discussion about the issues that this Pacifica struggle, from its very beginning, has emerged, has revealed. And sadly, I think we're being told that it's a polarized fight, which it's beginning to feel like for many of us, in which there's no place to have a dialogue, but one side is going to win. And it sure did look from the nation as if on the one side, from the Dingus article, and by the way, Dingus is programming, what's his position at NPR?
Former
editorial director at National Public Radio, so it's not exactly going to an unbiased source for the report. It made me feel there's a lot of powerful media forces aligned on one side of this discussion, and the rest of us still have to find a way to make our voices heard, which is what we're trying to do here today. But I do recommend people read it and then write to the nation, say what you think.
Robin, a question for you. What are the specific demands of the striking stringers? Is there room for compromise? And the writer asks, do you think that especially with police brutality on the rise in L.A. and New York, with economic inequality swelling and crucial issues going uncovered, maybe could you address the issue, is it important to have the PNN stringers inside reporting on these issues? And do you think the strike is going to make really a big difference?
I guess I'll start. Does this work? Can you hear me? I'll start with the last one first. I think that the strike already has made a big difference in that it's putting a tremendous amount of, putting a lot of pressure on management at Pacifica. They're really feeling the heat. They put a notice on their website about it, which, you know, no management wants to admit that they are under siege by their own workers. In a sense of wanting to be inside reporting on these important issues, I think one of the main issues that we need to speak out about are that the next time, you know, right now, this crisis in Berkeley made management feel very uncomfortable, and so they wouldn't report on it. And so that is really offensive to me. I mean, it puts my credibility on the line, and I think the next time an issue comes along that makes them feel uncomfortable, they may be just as willing to sweep it under the rug, and that goes for those issues that are very important to us, like police brutality in New York and Los Angeles. We don't know when that sensitive issue is going to come along. So, no, I think that we need to fight for a network that is really, truly going to welcome open, inquiring coverage of those really important issues, and that's what we're doing, and I don't think it's going to last forever. And in fact, that's one of the reasons why we started this Free Speech Radio News, because we didn't stop doing our work. I mean, in fact, I mean, it's a funny thing. I feel like I'm doing just as good work for KQED, which is a, you know, pretty mainstream public radio network. But in any case, I mean, we need to fight for a good alternative to Pacifica, and I think that's really important. In terms of our specific demands, the most important demand is that they restore editorial control to Pacifica News and to the stations, which Frank said he didn't have during the crisis in Berkeley. And that's, I mean, as I said, it's an outrage, but I think everybody knows why. And that's a major demand. We were demanding.